Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Party News, the show on the Nerd Party where we talk about the news. I'm Mike.
I'm Lance.
And today we've got a few little odds and ends, nothing earth-shattering, but, you know, clarification on some things and, you know, expansions on some other things. So, yeah, fun times. But before we get into that, Lance, have you seen anything good this week?
Only a few things, because unfortunately there was a lot of bad things I saw this week.
Yeah, right.
But I guess the best thing that I saw this week was probably The Bachelor. So with Matt James, the first Black Bachelor, and gotta say it's gonna be a fun season, because I kept kind of saying to, like, you know, like people in my inner circle, I was like, I don't think people are really ready for this, and for a lot of different reasons, and. You know, like, the discourse on it is already very interesting, and the show seems to be very interesting and will be interesting as it moves forward. The only thing I guess I was disappointed in is he didn't give a opening night rose to the ballerina, who's my favorite of the women that we were introduced to. But it's interesting so far. He gave his first impression rose to a deaf woman. So that was also very interesting. Like, you know, just like the diversity of the people involved is very, very high. So it should be an interesting show.
So is this the premiere, the season premiere?
Yeah, that was the premiere, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I didn't watch much of anything either this week. Like, I watched, like, I don't know, I guess ending on, you know, like a week ago, I had watched, like, at least a movie a day for, like, 45 days. Mm-hmm. And I had not watched a single movie since. Like, not single movie all week long until this morning. I watched a movie called Miss Juneteenth, which is apparently, according to Rotten Tomatoes, it's the best reviewed movie of 2020.
Okay.
And it's pretty good. It's about a woman who was like a beauty pageant winner back when she was in high school. And, you know, she kind of saw that as being like, you know, her ticket out, you know, like she was supposed to get like a scholarship and everything. And basically, you know, life got in the way and none of her dreams were realized, and now she's working as like a bartender. She lives in Texas, in Fort Worth, I guess. Okay. She's working as a bartender and everything like that, trying to raise her daughter, who's now, you know, 15 years old and is competing in the beauty pageant herself.
Oh, okay.
And she sees this as basically her chance at, you know, making things different, making things the way that she wanted them to play out back when she was a kid. But of course, the kid has absolutely no interest in, you know, doing all this stuff. So, you know, it just kind of goes from there. But it's a nice little, you know, character piece, and it's pretty good. I think that, I mean, I wouldn't put it up there as, like, you know, the best of the year or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's decent.
Okay.
It's a decent little movie. So,
good deal.
All right. So, last week's big story was there. You know, the DC plans for the movie universe or whatever. You know, DC's movie universe and all that.
You could probably put quotations around the word plans for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody's got plans, but, you know, as I just learned with Miss Juneteenth, sometimes those plans don't work out the way you think they will.
Yeah. What's that saying? Man plans, God laughs.
There you go. Yeah. But, you know, in that article, of course, one of the things which we discussed and everyone else has been discussing is the, I don't know, revelation, although it turns out maybe it's not a revelation, that there are going to be two Batman movies, or two movies with Batman in separate continuities, you know, running side by side. And a lot of people, were like, what does that mean? Including us, you know, we were speculating, could it be a Batman Beyond movie? What is it? You know, is Affleck coming back? Who knows? But the thing that we did know was, well, we got the Robert Pattinson thing coming, and Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck would be in the Flash movie, Flashpoint, I guess. Are they still calling it Flashpoint?
I think so.
Okay. So someone asked the writer of the article online, do you mean that there's going to be Robert Pattinson and another Batman series with another actor? Or do you mean there's the Robert Pattinson movie and the Michael Keaton movie? And the author responded, Keaton. And everybody was like, oh, my God, Keaton is the new Batman in the new, you know, in the DCEU. He's going to be the Batman, which a lot of people have been speculating on before this, you know, that there's rumors that he would take on a Nick Fury type of role.
Which is like, what are we doing, y'all?
But, I mean, that's kind of what he is in Batman Beyond, so maybe that is what they're doing, you know?
Maybe.
Maybe. But then a few hours later, the writer was like, I've been off Twitter for like 2 hours because I was moving and I came back and I found that, you know, everyone's going crazy. But he's like, just to clarify, I meant there's the Robert Pattinson Batman movie and Flashpoint with Michael Keaton in it. That's all I know. I don't know anything else. So the speculation continues. But, you know, I would love for Michael Keaton to be the new Batman. I've been saying this for years, but can you imagine if they had cast Michael Keaton as Batman in Batman versus Superman? Right?
That would have been nuts.
Like, you'd have to change the story a little bit, but
you'd have to completely change it.
Not that much, right? I mean, he's an older Batman. He's not that old, but he's not that much. Yeah, you know? I mean, okay. You could totally do that.
You could, but I'm going to stick to my guns here. If it's not old Bruce Wayne training a Terry McGinnis, I don't care. That's what I want from Michael Keaton's involvement as you know, Bruce Wayne moving forward. I don't want him to, you know, be a Nick Fury type in the sense that he's going to be around for a little bit, be super vague and not really do much and get his eye scratched out by a cat. I don't want that. All right.
Okay. That does sound pretty great though. When you put it like that.
Now, if it was like a regular Michael Keaton playing a different character and that happened too, I'm totally down with that because again, like I love Michael Keaton. But as far as him being Bruce Wayne, it's a natural progression from what we've seen of him from the Burton films to the next time we see him, he's unable to be Batman like he used to be because he's old and he's training the next generation. And that next generation is Terry McGinnis. That's what I want.
Yeah.
And then launch that universe. I do not understand why that hasn't been greenlit 5 years ago. Like this is something that should have been a thing a long time ago. I don't understand why they seem to either not want to do it. It's like they don't recognize that it's something there. It already has a built-in fan base, and it has great source material. They've had successful comic book runs of Batman Beyond in, you know, since at least what, 2010? Including the original one that came out, it was only a few issues, but like when the show was actually running, like just do it, like Nike, just do it. We don't need a setup. We don't need anything. Just do it. Batman Beyond. Period. Point blank.
They almost did do it 15 years ago.
They should have.
Yeah, they had. What was the guy's name? He's the guy who did Remember the Titans and stuff like that. I forget the guy's name, but he was going to direct it, and then they decided to pass on that in favor of Batman Begins.
I mean, great, we got Batman Begins, but like we could also do Batman Beyond, and it won't be confusing for anybody because again, everybody knows what it is.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's what they're setting up here, right? So, I mean, that you can do anything you want. You can have as many, you know, Batman characters and all that good stuff. So, hey. Why not? I mean, if they're making six movies a year,
if they're making six movies a year, and one of them's not Batman Beyond, I'm going to throw something.
And that seems to be, I mean, like with DC Comics, like it's all about Batman, right? I saw,
unfortunately,
a tweet from some writer the other day who's like, I have a great idea for a comic book, but I haven't figured out how to tie Batman into it yet.
Yeah, exactly. Again, Batman's my favorite character in all of fiction, right? But mm-hmm. like, I love other characters in fiction also, and I love other characters in DC as well. It's the same problem that the Batman books have and Batman IP in general has with Joker. I saw this great meme of it was like Batman writers trying to pick a villain for their story, and it's like it was a PlayStation controller, and like triangle was Joker, and the circle was like new villains, square was old villains that are underrated, and then X was something else, and it was just like triangle for Joker. It's just like, yeah, that's what they do, and it's just like it's not the answer.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. I mean, it seems to make sense. I mean, you look at, you know, the success that Sony has had with Miles Morales, you know, yep. and sort of the same deal, you know, younger, mm-hmm. cooler Batman.
Yeah.
Batman Beyond, yep. Sure, why not?
Yeah.
I still haven't seen all of Batman Beyond.
It's on HBO Max now.
I know, they just put it up there. I mean, I've liked what I've seen. I just haven't worked my way through the whole thing. So
you'll enjoy it. The show's great. Yeah. I can't recommend it enough.
And then didn't they do like a spinoff with like some secondary weird characters that I've never heard of? Like
what?
Now I need to look it up. Sorry.
Okay. Because now I'm confused.
The Zeta Project.
Oh, yeah. The Zeta Project. Yeah, that was a different show uh-huh. on Kids WB at the same time, but they managed to you know, Arrowverse it with Batman Beyond.
Okay. So it was like maybe there was like a backdoor pilot or something like that.
Yeah, and it will, and like, cuz Zeta is in an episode of Batman Beyond, and then like, yeah, and then it became the Zeta Project, and then they had another crossover where he meets Batman again.
Okay. So
but yeah, I think that show was only what, a season maybe?
Yeah, it says 26 episodes. So
okay, so yeah, it was just only one season. But yeah, it is part of the DC animated universe. And I think that was a conclusion that was drawn by the people over on Watchtower Database on YouTube. Shout out to them. But I think it is part of it because of the connection to Terry.
Well, okay. But I'm guessing it's probably not on HBO Max. You know, it's
no, not yet.
Probably they haven't the young Americans of the DC animated universe, where you'll never get to see it.
Yeah, well, they haven't even put Justice League on HBO Max yet.
And yeah,
that needs to be there, as well as Superman the Animated Series, and mm-hmm. obviously, and same thing with Static Shock. Like yeah. that needs to be on a streamer. You know, yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of failed backdoor pilots mm-hmm. and DC. Green Arrow and the Canaries is not happening.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because like when I saw this news and people were you know, talking about it on Twitter and stuff, I was like, well, this is not breaking news. This is broken news. We already knew this.
Yeah.
I guess it's just official at this point mm-hmm. because, you know, during the pandemic, like in the, like, I guess the summer months of the pandemic, Catherine McNamara, who plays Mia Smoke, the next Green Arrow, she had signed on to do a couple other projects. And so I was just like, well, like that's, people were just like, well, that's pretty much it. And so did, you know, Juliana Harkavy, and then so did a couple others who were involved in the backdoor pilot. It's just like, well, I guess, you know, they didn't come to a conclusion and they have to make money also. They got to work. So they signed on to some new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know. I'm not there yet, so I don't really know what's going on. But I don't know. I keep on hearing people talk about them wanting to like wrap up the Arrowverse, but then they keep on mm-hmm. launching new shows. I mean, we've got Superman and Lois. Mm-hmm. They're doing a new backdoor pilot on Black Lightning next year.
Yeah,
and you know, it doesn't seem like it's ending. I mean, it seems like they're maybe phasing certain things which have been around for a billion years out.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. I think it's evolving rather than ending. And it's going to evolve into some new things and newer iterations of that universe, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
and some new characters are going to come to the fore. But for a second there, it did feel like it was ending, because, you know, Supergirl is ending. Arrow has already ended.
Yeah.
You know, Black Lightning is ending. So Flash is kind of running on fumes, and you could kind of assume that it's going to end at some point pretty soon. And I don't know if they're going to, you know, Beethoven rule them and only give them 8 seasons out of respect, just kind of like, kind of like how the Star Trek series, like how a bunch of them went 7. Right. So, I'm not exactly sure, but it seems like now it's just like, oh, we're just going to evolve things, and they're going to kind of launch with new things and have newer ongoing superhero shows on their network, because it's, at this point, it's their brand to have that.
Yeah.
So I guess they're just kind of changing it up.
I guess, you know, there's other things which would kind of like signal, you know, it ending or whatever, you know, the idea that you have Star Girl and you have Titans and Doom Patrol, which are all by the same people, but not part of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know. And Green Lantern too, probably. Right.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see, but you know, they've had a good run regardless. So hopefully they can keep it going.
Agreed. And for those that, you know, that listen to my Arrow show, we will get to Mia Smoke and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is. So
oh, we'll get there, y'all.
Okay. All right. Well, other people are maybe having a bit more success with their superhero franchises. Netflix has announced that We Can Be Heroes was watched by a billion people or whatever.
It's amazing.
Did you see it?
Not yet. It's in my queue because I'm going to make a point to definitely watch it, because a friend of mine is in it.
Ah.
She has I went to college with her. She has a small bit part. She's like an alien, but you know, going to support her
because
she started, you know, trying to make her way in the industry a few years ago. And she didn't really give up on it, but she just kind of pivoted after getting her music degree. So now this is like this is probably the biggest thing that she's been in. She's been in a bunch of smaller things. So yeah, I'm going to definitely check it out for her sake.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I watched it because, you know, it's Robert Rodriguez and everything. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's not very good. I know it's getting good reviews. Like, people are like, yeah, it's fun, it's great, you know, way better than Sharkboy and Lava Girl. And it's like, yeah, it's way better than Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I agree with that.
But I love those.
Well, then you'll love this, because that movie was bad.
No, I'm aware that it is, but it's like, but I love it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair. You know, I mean, good for Rodriguez getting to do a sequel. Like, I can see why kids would love it, you know?
Yeah.
It's very much, you know, I mean, as it's been described, it's basically Spy Kids, but with superheroes instead of spies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I can totally see why kids would dig it. I guess my personal feelings, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that Rodriguez is, you know, continuing down this path, because I feel like with Spy Kids, as great as Spy Kids was, it opened up a door to a certain type of filmmaking that Rodriguez really embraced, where he could basically do everything himself. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like the quality of his movies on the whole sort of dropped off at that point, because he wanted to maintain so much control that he, first off, sacrificed collaboration, which was valuable to his movies, but also, you know, cut corners in order to do everything. And that's his choice and everything like that, whatever. But I really feel like his work suffered because of it. And with Alita, I feel like he kind of course corrected and went into in some ways, more standard direction, which resulted in better movies. You know, and we saw that play out with Mandalorian and everything. And now with We Can Be Heroes, I feel like he's going back to what he had been doing in, you know, basically the early part of the 21st century. Okay. And, you know, I mean, like I said, good for him. I'm glad. I mean, he's one of the few people who seems to get to do what he wants to do. And I think one of the reasons why he does that is because he's able to keep things cheap and because he's able to maintain so much control over them. But mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's just not for me. You know, I can see like everything else that he does, which is like very, very much for me. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wish that he would go back to that stuff. But I mean, we'll still get it with Boba Fett and everything like that. And the good thing about Rodriguez is that he makes movies in about a day. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of opportunity for him to do other stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, I think so.
Yeah. But it's cool that he's expanding on this universe and everything too. That's always always fun. Okay, so speaking of expanded universes, Michael Waldron has been hired to write a Star Wars movie. Now, the Star Wars movie that he's writing is the Kevin Feige Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
which seems to be this odd little thing unto itself, in that they're really making it like a Marvel movie, right?
Yes.
Like Feige is running it through his production arm and everything like that. Lucasfilm is obviously involved, but they're kind of hands off with the process. I mean, they've really just kind of said, like, Marvel, you guys are really good at making movies. Why don't you make a Star Wars movie?
Yeah, it's kind of like let's see what a Star Wars movie would look like in Marvel hands. You know, it's like, let's try this. I think it's very experimental, and I don't know. We'll see. Cause I'm not exactly sure. Cause we don't know really much about what this is going to be, especially considering it's a standalone and it's its own thing. So I'm kind of curious to see what part of the universe they're going to focus on, what characters are going to be involved. Like, I'd love to know more information, cause that would kind of give me a better idea about what to expect, especially if it's going to be Marvelized.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like Marvel doing a Star Wars comic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just about to kind of go into that. Yeah.
You know, cause I mean, like you look at like, well, let's say the originals, and they had like, you know, Carmine Infantino drawing them or whatever, you know, as my friend says, the only person to draw the human figure with a T square. But, you know, it was very much like a comic book, you know, even though it was Star Wars.
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously, I don't think that that's what this is going to be, but it's interesting to see. I mean, the Marvel, you know, Marvel Studios is such a well-oiled machine that, you know, they know how to do this stuff. And for them to just do something like adjacent to that, I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Again, like it, I'd love to know more about the project, because again, that would kind of give me a little bit of inkling to what to expect. But at the same time, not knowing what to expect could be a good thing. You know, we have no, because this way we have no expectation, and we could be pleasantly surprised by what comes out.
I agree, and I trust Feige. You know, I mean, he seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah, he's definitely earned that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, who knows who will direct it? But I think it's probably gonna follow the Marvel formula of, you know, getting someone to, you know, kind of like with television, you know, like getting someone to do what the showrunner, you know, wants them to do, in a sense.
Yeah.
And this guy, Michael Waldron, we don't know much about him either. Like, he's done
Rick and Morty.
Yeah, he's done Rick and Morty. That's his big thing. Mm-hmm. But he's a writer. Well, he created the Loki show.
Okay.
And he wrote Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Okay. All right. So basically what we need to do is we need to make sure that we pay attention to both of those shows when they air, because that will give us an inkling of kind of what to expect. Because I don't think it'd be fair to say to, you know, watch seasons 1 through 4 of Rick and Morty, and this is what we're going to get out of the Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be it. But I think probably what we'll see in Loki is probably what we'll is probably a good guess to what we'll probably see in this new Star Wars in a lot of ways.
You would think so, right? I mean, I can definitely see a through line. And maybe Doctor Strange too, it would be an even better sense of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing that you know, stands out to me with those titles and everything, apparently Waldron has been given some sort of like big, you know, Disney contract or whatever for, you know, all this stuff and continuing, you know, whatever. And you see this happen occasionally where like someone who basically doesn't have any like credits gets like a billion projects because whatever they're doing is like really good. Like I have this, it says two things to me. One, like Feige is really happy with Loki and Doctor Strange too, you know, and he trusts this guy to do Star Wars, but also, you know, it probably means that Loki and Doctor Strange 2 are going to be really good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. It actually, it's similar to one of the first people who was hired from the outside to write a Star Wars movie, Lawrence Kasdan. He was hired, he wrote The Bodyguard, which was not produced at that time. The script was passed around. Everyone loved it, but they never actually made it. And based on that script, he was hired to write Raiders of the Lost Ark. And while he was writing Raiders of the Lost Ark, Lucas went to him and said, hey, can you write Empire Strikes Back? And Kasdan was like, you haven't even seen my script for Raiders of the Lost Ark yet. What if you hate it? And Lucas is like, nah, it'll be good. And then he wrote Empire Strikes Back and the rest is history. So
yeah, it's the GOAT.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of a similar situation, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, Feige is not the only person moving on from the Marvel Universe and doing something different. The Russo brothers are as well. And they've got their first movie post-Endgame coming out in February. And then it'll be streaming on Apple TV Plus in March. And that movie is Cherry, starring Tom Holland. A much smaller movie. It's Oscar bait. And they released the first clip from the movie over the weekend. Did you watch this?
I did.
Yeah,
what'd you think? Well, Tom looks more like Peter Parker in this than he did in Homecoming or Far From Home. That was my first thought.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's impossible to judge what a movie will be based on like a minute long scene, right? Mm-hmm. But he's like a guy who's in like a recruitment office for the army.
Yeah,
and apparently the movie, you know, deals a lot with like, you know, PTSD and stuff like that. They did show it to critics, and the reviews have been very mixed, you know, like some people saying like, this is a really good movie, you know, put it up there with the rest of the Oscar contenders, and other people saying this is easily the Russo brothers' worst movie and one of the worst movies of the year. So we'll just have to see about that one. But
yeah,
I mean, I'm definitely going to see it. I mean, that'll really be like, that'll be like the last movie to come out of the year, essentially, the Oscar year. Well, we got a couple of other trailers this week. One for a super duper brand new movie, which is getting kind of a surprise drop on Thursday on HBO Max. It's a movie called Locked Down.
Yeah.
With Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel Ejiofor. And this is a movie which was directed by Doug Liman, who did, you know,
Identity?
Identity, there you go. Born Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Go, Swingers. I mean, lots and lots of really good
The funny ones. Thing about that, like you're listing off all those titles, I could see a lot of those in the trailer that we saw for this film. I'm excited about this one.
I'm very excited about this one.
This one looks great. I mean, like I love Anne Hathaway, and Chiwetel Ejiofor like that guy a lot too. So this, because like, you know, it's going along and you're just like, okay, this is, like at first, like, you know, you see it like at the beginning of the trailer, it's like, oh really, we're doing a pandemic, like, you know, locked in movie. And then it, like, as the trailer goes on, you're just like, oh well, this is new, this looks neat.
yeah the idea of like a heist movie, like an Ocean's 11 style heist movie, like during lockdown,
with a little bit of Mr. and Mrs. Smith mixed in there.
I think it's going to be good. I mean, I really do love Doug Liman. There's some stuff that he's done which hasn't quite, you know, lived up to expectations, like Jumper, for example, was a pretty bad movie.
Yep.
But I mean, I just watched Go again, you know, for Christmas, and God, that movie is so great. You know, and Mr. and Mrs. Smith is, I mean, I know that people love it, but it's, I still think it's extremely underrated.
I do too.
And he also directed the first two episodes of The O.C., so.
Which is a show I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
I love The O.C.
It's great. So I think this is going to be great. And the fact that, you know, they're just kind of like, guess what? Thursday, you know?
Yeah, I know.
That's awesome. So that definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And then there was another trailer for another lockdown movie, another pandemic shoot, Malcolm and Marie.
Yeah.
Which is by Sam Levinson, the guy who created Euphoria.
Yeah.
And it stars Zendaya and John David Washington as a married couple who are potentially going through a breakup, I guess.
Maybe, yeah.
It was all shot like in their house in black and white, you know, and it was a movie which was made because they couldn't shoot Euphoria. They were planning on doing Euphoria season two, and when that fell through, they were like, well, what can we do instead? And they decided to do this.
Yeah.
And this has been getting some pretty good buzz. A lot of people are saying that it lives up to the hype.
Cool.
But I absolutely love Euphoria. I think that that show is extremely well made. It reminds me of like watching Paul Thomas Anderson stuff, like early, like Magnolia era Paul Thomas Anderson, which is my absolute favorite, you know?
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to seeing this for sure. Yeah.
This looks great. And the first thing that kind of came to my mind when watching this is, this will probably, to me, do a better job than what Marriage Story was trying to do. Because to me, Marriage Story was just kind of meh and whatever. This looks like it will do that way better.
It did really have Marriage Story vibes to it, didn't it?
Yes.
Like, well, Netflix has found their thing, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, Marriage Story was fine, you know, but I did not think it was, you know, Oscar worthy or anything.
Oh, yeah, it definitely was not.
Yeah, yeah. But this looks pretty cool. I'm excited about it. Yeah. So lots of movies to look forward to in the coming weeks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this is, I don't know, I guess kind of a minor thing, but at the same thing, maybe not super duper minor. As he's talked about for a while now, Steven Soderbergh has a box set coming out with 7 of his movies, which that in and of itself, it's like, okay, who cares? But the thing about it is 3 of those movies are recut. I mean, that's one of the things that he did during the pandemic. And in addition to writing like 3 scripts and promoting his brand of liquor and figuring out, like, he's like the DGA guy who's like figuring out how to shoot stuff safely during the pandemic and everything like that. In addition to doing all those things, he decided to go back and re-edit a couple of his movies. And 2 of those are Schizopolis and Full Frontal, which he says he just made those a little bit tighter, you know, made them a little shorter, which, to be honest, Schizopolis, I'm like, good for you on that, because boy, you know, it could certainly use a little trimming. But the big one is Kafka, which was his second movie. Have you seen Kafka?
I have, but I don't really remember a lot of it. But I remember seeing like a good chunk. I think this was college, I think, when I saw it, and it was intriguing, but like other stuff was going on. I was not like in the right mindset to watch it, and was not in the right environment to really watch that.
Yeah.
It's been on my list of things to watch again, because I saw it referenced in something a few years ago. It's like, I need to watch Kafka again. But this is the part of the story that really got my attention.
Yeah. Kafka, I would say, is arguably his worst movie, but it's still very interesting. You know, I mean, there was nothing about it which was not intriguing, I guess, you know, shot in black and white, you know, everything like that. It very much has sort of like a Brazil vibe to it, of course, because, you know, it's Kafka. It's about, Kafka. Well, it's not really about Kafka, but whatever. Anyway,
I get your point.
he always saw it as like this kind of like missed opportunity and felt that like it could work if it was dramatically reinvented. So okay. He's gone back. He's talked about this for years. You know, like one of the things that he did at the end of the year, or he does at the end of every year, is release a list of like all the movies.
The stuff you read and watched.
Yeah. And back in 2015, you could see that he watched his new cut of this movie. So this thing has been sitting around just waiting to be released for like over 5 years. Oh, wow. And he's talked about it a lot. You know, he's re-editing it so substantially that he's changing like a lot of the dialogue and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He's redubbing the whole thing in German and then putting like English subtitles underneath it, basically, I think, so that he can change the dialogue. And he's described this as like a midnight cut. You know, he sees this as like a movie which will play in repertory houses, you know, midnight screenings on, you know, Friday and Saturday nights, like that sort of thing. That's how he's envisioning this movie. And he's changing the title to Mr. Neff. And we're finally going to get to see it in the third quarter of 2021, apparently.
Okay.
So that's really exciting. I mean,
neat.
He does a lot of re-editing stuff like for movies that aren't his, you know, just for the hell of it, I guess, you know, like he re-edited 2001 and stuff like that, puts them up on his website. It's always interesting to see what he has up his sleeve. So definitely excited to see what he's doing with these three movies.
Should be interesting for sure. Yeah. I'll definitely have to check it out. And I think I'll definitely have to make a point to watch Kafka before then, and then this as well.
If it were me, I think I would watch this first and then
and
Kafka
then,
after.
And then Kafka, okay.
Yeah. That's what I would do, but that's just me. So
okay. Well, either way, I'm going to have to watch both of these
now
with a different perspective and also in the right mindset and environment to watch it. Because again, I was in college and I think I was like at a party and it was on, which I don't know why it was, but I can't remember the exact circumstance. But again, it was college, so
yeah,
I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. All right. We've got one final story this week. Michael Apted, the world-renowned director of a billion movies, passed away. You know, he's known for doing, lots of prestige pictures like Coal Miner's Daughter and stuff like
that.
Which
is a classic.
Yeah. And as well as, you know, things like the Bond movie, The World Is Not Enough.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love. I love that movie.
I love the Brosnan Bond movies.
Yeah, they're all great, right?
Yeah, like I don't really have any problem with them except for the last one he did.
Die Another Day?
Die Another Day, yeah. That was the one that was just like, that didn't really hit. But I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I like that movie a lot. I think that it's kind of misunderstood. I don't know. I see it as like a throwback to like the Moore movies and
A lot of the Brosnan films are kind of throwbacks to Roger Moore in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I guess so. I don't know. I like all four of them. But World Is Not Enough. I don't know. In some ways, it feels like the most polished. It feels like the most like a movie. Like they kind of hit their stride with that one. I'm not saying it's the best. I think Tomorrow Never Dies is the best, to be honest. But
I agree.
But he also... he did. I don't know if you remember, there was like the year, I don't know why anyone would remember this, but like in 2002, he had two movies, Enigma and Enough, and they came out within like 5 days of each other, and they both started with the letters E-N.
I saw Enough. I didn't see Enigma.
And Enigma was the one which was like the, this is a fancy art house movie, you know, and then Enough was the one with Jennifer
J-Lo.
Lopez.
Yeah.
But, Enough is better than Enigma. I'm sorry.
Yes, it is. That's what, I saw the trailer. I was like, nah, But of course, like, you know, J-Lo's in something, so I was going to see it.
She was great in that. I mean,
she's underrated.
She's definitely underrated. I mean, you look at like Out of Sight, like that performance is outstanding. Mm-hmm. But then Enough. And then, of course, now with, you know, Hustlers, she's kind of had a resurgence and everything. So
absolutely.
Yeah, she's great. But he's also directed a long-running documentary series, which is, you know, a huge piece of film history, the 7-Up series. Hey, have you watched these?
No, I've not.
The idea behind it was like back, well, 63 years ago, he filmed these 7-year-old kids just interacting with each other, like on the playground, like classmates, you know? Mm-hmm. And the idea was basically like, how do kids from different social backgrounds interact, and how, you know, does like class play out on a 7-year-old level, like that sort of thing, you know?
Okay.
So 7 years later, they went back and they're like, okay, these kids are 14 now. Let's see where they're at. Let's see how their relationships have changed, you know, everything like that. They did that. And then they just kept on doing it. Every 7 years, they would go back and revisit these people and see where they were at in their lives and how.
Interesting.
And they took it all the way up. Last year, we got 63 up. All those 7-year-old kids are now 63 years old.
Holy crap.
It's insane. And it's awesome.
It's kind of like a Boyhood thing, right?
It is. It's like Boyhood in real life, you know? And, you know, I mean, a lot of it is kind of soap opera-y, you know, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, whatever. A lot of people say it's kind of like the first reality TV show. And I guess in a sense it is. But just the idea that he was able to chronicle these people's lives, like for their entire life, you know, is just insane. And I still haven't seen 63 Up. I had actually programmed it to play at some of my theaters right before, you know, lockdown hit. So I never got to see it, but, it looks like that'll be the last one now, I guess. I don't know if anyone else will take on the mantle or whatever, you know, now that Apted has passed away, but I kind of feel like it's going to just end, because I mean, a lot of it is like all these people who are in the documentary, you know, a lot of them kind of like come and go. And a lot of them are just kind of like, this is really annoying. Like every 7 years we have to do this. Every 7 years, my life is exposed to the world. I'm kind of over it, you know?
I gotcha.
So I feel like this is probably going to be the last one regardless, but still, I mean, one of the absolute most impressive feats in, you know, movie history, you know? And he was doing all that while he was making James Bond movies and stuff like that. You know, it's crazy. So
that's impressive.
Yeah.
Most impressive.
He's a legend. He will be missed.
So. Indeed.
All right. Well, that's pretty much all the news for this week. I mean, lots of cool stuff coming out in the coming week. You know, we got the Locked Down on the 14th.
Yeah.
We've got WandaVision on the 15th.
Friday.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a fun week, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Let's hope that it's a fun week.
Let's hope it's better than last week.
Yes. Positive vibes only.
Like, yes.
My goodness.
Yes. Yes. Oh, well. Well, until next week, where can people find you on the internet, Lance?
They can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias. And they can also find me over on the United Federation of Podcasts talking about all the things that make Arrow, Arrow. And you can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. You can also find me on my website, filmdamagepod.com, doing a show called Film Damage, where we talk about film projection, Star Trek, and time travel. We just finished our epic 23-week Star Trek run, and now we're probably going to change it up a bit with some time travel, probably do an episode on Tenet, because you kind of have to if you're going to be talking about time travel, right? So. Yeah. We'll see, but we'll have something over there in the not-too-distant future. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.